This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is where almost all bodies that are collected by the police are brought. And as you can see, it's a beehive of activity. There are so many families here, and they've come to look for their kin. But more importantly, also, once they identify their kin, is to make sure that the autopsy is undertaken.
That's Hussein Khalid, Chief Executive Officer of Vocal Africa, an organization of community activists visiting Nairobi City's mortuary, which has been busy caring for the bodies of those killed during economic protests. Details coming up. Meanwhile, protests resume in Kenya against rising taxes, and UNHCR is raising its humanitarian aid appeal for refugees fleeing Sudan. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The situation remains tense and unpredictable in Nairobi and other parts of the East African nation today following new protests by members of the youth group popularly known as Generation Z. Demonstrations today turned violent when thousands of young protesters faced off in Nairobi with police. The protesters threw rocks at police, who fired tear gas to disperse them. The protesters today were demanding that President William Ruto resign and scrap what they describe as illegal and illegitimate offices that use taxpayers' money. There were demonstrations reported in 37 counties and most major cities. As protests resumed in Nairobi and elsewhere in Kenya this week, some families are busy visiting morgues to collect bodies of their relatives who died during recent demonstrations against proposed tax hikes and are preparing to bury them. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo visited the city mortuary and has this story.
Here at Nairobi's city mortuary, families gathered to pick up the bodies of their loved ones who died during last week's protests. Hussein Khaled, CEO of Vocal Africa, an organization of community activists, paints the picture for us.
So we're at the city public morgue. This is where almost all bodies that are collected by the police are brought. And as you can see, it's a beehive of activity. There are so many families here, and they've come to look for their kin. But more importantly, also, once they identify their kin, is to make sure that the autopsy is undertaken to confirm the cause of death.
Khaled says his organization is here to help.
We are here to support the families, particularly those that were shot and killed by police officers, so that we make sure we have the necessary documentation that will help us in seeking justice.
We spoke to Joseph Mwangi Njeru and Mary Muthoni, parents of Kennedy Mwangi Njeru, a 20-year-old who died last week during the protests.
He was shooted on the head and the back of the bone.
In broken English, Kennedy's dad said that he was shot in the head and the back. His son was his best friend, he told us, and the best child. And as his firstborn, he loved him so much. Kennedy's mom and aunt, Esther, also spoke to us.
I felt very bad. My son is gone and never seen it again. I feel unless I will die for my son.
We have a lot of stress in our mind. We were arranging to bury her on Thursday this week, but yet now we don't have money even to pay child to travel. We have to bury her in Kirinyaga.
Akumu Maina, who lost her 17-year-old son, Kevin
I have to watch the girl pay the school fees. I was just that way. I don't have a husband. My husband has died in a road accident.
I have like to say, if they can help me to move the body to the cemetery, it could be good. That's only the thing I can say, because I don't have anything to carry the body up to the cemetery. I don't have anything.
Activist Hanifa Adan and others have recently set up an account through Mchanga, a mobile contribution platform, to help offset some of the protesters' medical and funeral expenses.
We started the fundraise. I think we are over 25 million now. Kenyan shillings. I just put out the link and we had a target of 10 million, but it actually surpassed. We collected 24 million in a day in just like 10 hours.
She explains how the money raised, equivalent to $193,000, is being used.
So for the ones in the hospital, they send me all the required documents. I verify and then send to Mchanga. Mchanga also verifies and then it sends to the hospital directly. And for the bereaved family, they're each receiving 200K, 150K, depending on how much their budget is.
The death toll from the recent protest varies. While President William Ruto said on Sunday it was 19 people, the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights says that number is higher and confirms that 24 people have died since the protest against the proposed tax increases began 2 weeks ago. As some protesters ask for his resignation, the Kenyan president promises a thorough investigation into the deaths. He has since withdrawn the controversial tax bill and proposed a multisectoral forum to engage the youth and discuss issues related to debt, taxation, unemployment, and corruption, among others. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenya's ongoing protests against proposed tax increases and the administration of President William Ruto are organized by citizens mostly in their 20s from the so-called Gen Z group. But dissatisfaction with the government's largely led by elderly politicians is by no means confined to the youth of East Africa's biggest economy. Darren Taylor reports.
Egypt, Kenya, Nigeria and South Africa are four of Africa's most successful economies built on natural resources. Yet each country is grappling with high rates of unemployment among people between the ages of 15 and 34, many of them university graduates. In an alleyway in Johannesburg city centre, 24-year-old Vusi Kudzwayo sells second-hand clothes. He has a college diploma in business administration, but cannot find a formal job.
Once you come out the university system, there are no jobs waiting for you currently because the private sector is not absorbing you. There's no way in the world where most jobs are in government. The private sector needs to be the one that redeploys capital to reinvest into job creation.
Kudzwayo says many African governments have policies that channel wealth to themselves. These old dinosaur men, as he puts it, want to control employment and money instead of freeing private companies to grow and create jobs. Kudzwayo says he knows exactly how young Kenyans feel about being asked to pay high taxes.
The only people that end up getting the short end of the stick are ordinary young black people who can work close to nothing in the name of they need a job, right? But we know that they can't afford to live, they can't afford to eat, they can't afford to clothe themselves with that so-called foot in the door.
The United Nations estimates that 35% of youth with higher education are unemployed in Egypt. The numbers similar in Nigeria and Kenya. In South Africa, almost half of all young people who should be working, 5 million, cannot find jobs. In Johannesburg, development economist Laura Fisher is studying rising youth frustration across Africa.
I have no doubt in my mind that we are in a crisis, especially when we consider that the unemployment rate is not only increasing in young people, but there's also a sense of disillusionment setting in because the employment decline implies economic recession and automation replacing jobs. And I think that for the youth, this is very disheartening. There's just this sort of apathy around really increasing your education and even your desire to look for employment.
In July 2021 in South Africa, what began as a protest against the imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma morphed into rioting in several cities. The violent spree was soon taken over by 18 to 25-year-olds, venting their anger over unemployment and poverty and perceived lack of concern from government leaders in their 60s and 70s. Cameroonian economist Leonard Mbulenziege says many African economies are badly structured.
What happens to a lot of these youths who can't gain access to formal employment is that they get absorbed into the informal economy. And in my home country, Cameroon, 90% of employed individuals find themselves in the informal sector. So these are low-paying jobs, little security, very minimal social protection in domains such as transport. In West and East Africa, being a motorcycle rider is quite popular. Small-scale retail, telecommunications now. A lot of people get into selling of mobile phones or selling mobile credits.
Anthony Mveyange, the director of the Partnership for African Social and Governance Research, says economies aren't industrializing fast enough, so job opportunities are limited.
African economies are largely agricultural. We tend to argue agriculture is the backbone of our economies. They're not diversified. Most of the sectors that you wish to see generating decent jobs are not optimal in the way that one would see the other regions in the world. Service sector is coming up now, but not to the level where we want it to be, manufacturing sector. For those reasons, we don't see so much jobs in terms of what can absorb the youth bulge.
Fisher says the deadly violence in Kenya is a good example of what can happen if a country's young people feel ignored and mistreated. What's scary, she says, is that the conditions that inspired the unrest in Kenya and South Africa are mirrored across the continent. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is raising its humanitarian aid appeal as increasing numbers of people flee raging war and hunger in Sudan in search of safety in neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UNHCR says it now requires $1.5 billion, up $100 million over its January appeal, to assist 3.3 million refugees as well as the local communities hosting them. Money from the January appeal has been used to help those who have fled Sudan to five neighboring countries, the Central African Republic, Chad, Egypt, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. UNHCR Head of Global Communications, Ewan Watson, says the revised appeal includes help for two new countries, Libya and Uganda. Since the start of the war in April 2023, he says the UNHCR has registered 20,000 new arrivals in Libya from Sudan, mainly fleeing Darfur.
We understand that thousands more have arrived in Libya that are not registered and are in the east of the country. Clearly there, the situation is extremely difficult for these refugees. Local services available in the country are really overstretched.
Watson says there's little shelter in the region, and refugee families are forced to sleep out in the open. He says medical facilities cannot keep up with the growing needs, putting children in particular at risk of malnutrition. Watson says Uganda, which already was the largest refugee-hosting country in Africa, is fast becoming home to a burgeoning Sudanese refugee population. Since the outbreak of the war, he says more than 39,000 Sudanese refugees have fled to neighboring Uganda. He says 70% have arrived just this year, triple the number who were initially expected or predicted.
Most of them are arriving from Khartoum and have a university-level education and are looking to rebuild their lives. So through this appeal, we will be working with host governments to support access to territory and to asylum systems for these Sudanese refugees fleeing the brutal war.
Watson notes the UNHCR has received only 19% of the money it needs to run its refugee humanitarian operations. He says this is abysmally insufficient to cover the most basic needs for people forced to flee. He says heavy rains expected in some of the hosting countries risk complicating the delivery of aid, particularly in border areas. He appeals to international donors to provide the funds needed to help strengthen government-led efforts. Otherwise, he warns, more and more refugees will be forced to seek help further afield in countries such as Libya, which are extremely difficult for refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Ouagadougou, the capital of Burkina Faso, an Italian expatriate runs a rather unique business for a foreigner, selling grilled pork, a highly appreciated dish. Gilda Dar has the story narrated by Azuma Compare.
When Bori Torcicio came to Burkina Faso from Italy in 2014, he had plans to start a business renting trucks. When that failed, Torcicio drew on his childhood experience eating and preparing grilled pork with his family in Italy and pivoted to selling the specialty in Burkina Faso. He says he tried and it worked. It caught on and he continued.
He tried it and it worked. It caught on and I continued.
Torcicio settled down permanently in Burkina Faso. He says he felt welcome here. He says he feels good, he has friends, he has everything. He didn't find it hard to integrate.
I feel good, I have
friends, I have everything. I didn't find it hard to integrate with them.
After moving to Ouagadougou, he married a Burkinabe woman and had children. Now, in his 50s, Torcicio currently has 3 Burkinabe employees whom he has trained in the job. Timote Basole is one of them. He says his job allows him to feed his family. When there are difficulties, Torcicio is always there. He's an Italian, but now they say he's Burkinabe. He's no longer Italian.
Often, when there are difficulties, he's always there. This job allows me to feed my family. He's Italian, but now we say he's Burkinabe. He's no longer Italian.
Torcicio's grilled pork is very popular among his customers in Ouagadougou. Prosper Sano has been enjoying Torcicio's cooking for years. He says he can tell a story of something quite special. His wife had never eaten pork before, but when she saw how it was cooked, she tried it and has been eating it ever since.
As a little story, I can tell you something quite special. My wife had never eaten pork, but when she saw how it was cooked, she tried it, and she has been eating it ever since.
Torcicio's business has been impacted by the ongoing war in the Sahel region nations of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, which killed an estimated 12,000 people in 2023. But Torcicio says he has no plans to return to Italy. No, he says, he wants to stay here and he truly wishes the Burkinabe people luck so that this war ends quickly.
No,
I want to stay here and I truly wish the Burkinabe people luck so that this war ends quickly.
Boy Torcicio says he will keep doing what he loves and hopes for the war's end so that the economy and his business can grow and thrive. For Gildas Da in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, this is Orzuma Compaoré.
Former South Carolina governor and UN ambassador Nikki Haley continued to draw support from Republican voters long after she dropped out of this year's U.S. presidential race. VOA's Dora McCore looks at how Haley supporters may help determine the winner of the election between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump.
Nearly 3 months after suspending her campaign for president, former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley announced that she would vote for former President Donald Trump in November.
Biden has been a catastrophe, so I will be voting for Trump.
But her supporters are not necessarily following her lead. A March 2024 Emerson College poll found that Haley voters were almost twice as likely to say they would vote for President Joe Biden over Trump. Other exit polls suggest at least half of Haley voters won't vote for Trump. These Haley supporters explain what they're thinking.
I was sad to hear that Nikki did not get enough votes to stay in the race. However, I'm not a fan of President Trump. I feel very concerned about the Republican Party.
I would not really have what I consider to be a viable option in a Trump versus Biden election. I really don't want to see either one of them in the White House next year.
You know, I'm not happy with either. I mean, I did support Trump, and I would probably still lean that way.
Haley says Trump should court her voters.
Trump would be smart to reach out to the millions of people who voted for me and continue to support me and not assume that they're just going to be with him.
Haley supporters have the potential to swing this presidential election. During April's Pennsylvania primary, Haley earned up to one quarter of Republican votes in wealthier suburbs, even though she dropped out of the race weeks earlier. Analysis of the 2020 presidential election suggests success with suburban voters tipped the scales in Biden's favor. Haley pulled in big numbers in swing states, including Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, and Wisconsin. Dante Scala is a political science professor at the University of New Hampshire.
You saw a lot of upscale, well-educated, well-off Republican voters trending toward Nikki Haley, and I think that included some of those independents as well. I could see some of them becoming swing voters in the general election.
How do you bring these Nikki Haley voters back into the tent?
I'm not sure we need too many.
The Biden campaign is actively pursuing Haley supporters with ads like this, which showcase Trump bashing Haley, who he appointed UN ambassador. It's part of a wider Biden strategy to attract anti-Trump Republicans. University of Virginia political science professor Larry Sabato.
So far, Trump's problem is going to be consolidating the Haley vote. I don't know if you call it a Republican vote, but he has to get a large majority of the Haley vote.
There has been no sustained public drive by the Trump campaign to attract voters who chose Haley in the Republican Party primaries, even though in a tight race, those supporters might make the difference on Election Day. Dora McQuar, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations Children's Agency says the Central African Republic's 3 million children are the world's most deprived, with widespread malnutrition, inadequate health care access, and instability, putting the country at high risk of a humanitarian crisis. UNICEF says the country's children do not have access to health services, and almost 40% suffer from chronic malnutrition. Few have access to clean water, sanitation, or healthy diets. Reuters News reports that a UNICEF representative in the country says, with global attention focused on the war in Gaza and other conflicts, the plight of the African nation's children has become painfully invisible. The agency says 3 million boys and girls face the highest registered level of overlapping and interconnected crisis and deprivation in the world. Reuters News reports that Algerian authorities arrested two journalists for publishing a video showing businesswomen protesting how they were treated at a government-sponsored event. Sofina Girous and Farhat Omar of the news website Algeria Scoop were detained last week for broadcasting material authorities claimed constituted incitement and hate speech. This according to a statement from a National Committee for the Liberation of Detainees, a local watchdog group, on Saturday. Journalists in Algeria have faced repression since President Abdelmadjid Tebboune came to power 4 years ago, with possible long jail sentences for flimsy charges. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer David Van Dee and our engineer Adrias Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. Israeli forces order Palestinians to be on the move again in Gaza. AP correspondent Charles